Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're on Canto 9, Chapter 18. King Yayati regains his youth. You have to excuse me a second. Is anybody good at foot massage? I got a cramp. That's my foot's cramping up. I can't. Yeah. Just press it. Just right there. Just press. No, hold it. Press it and hold. That's all right. Sorry about this. One of the trials of having a material body doesn't always work when you want it to. Yeah, if you wouldn't mind. All right, Sikyamit is going to read the Sanskrit.
Utam utamas chintatam kuryat proktakari tu mad yama adamo shadaya kuryat akato charitam pitu utamas chintitam kuryat Proktakari tu madayam. Proktakari tu madyama. Adamo shadaya kuryat. Akarto charitam pitu. Utamas chintitam kuryat. Proktakari tu madhyama adamo shadaya kuryat akato charitam pitu. Vaishnavas chant. Utamas chintitam kuryat Proktakari tu madhyama Adamo shadaya kuryat Akato charitam pitu. Vaishnavis, some ladies. Utamas chintiyam kuryat Proktakari tu madhyama Dhammo Shraddhaya Kuryat Kato Charitam Pitu Tumas Chintiyam Kuryat Proktakari Tumadhyama Dhammo Shraddhaya Kuryat Akato Uttama the best Chintitam considering the father's idea Kuryat acts accordingly Proktakari one who acts on the order of the father to indeed Madhyama Mediocre. Adama, lower class. Ashraddaya, without any faith. Kuryat, acts. Akarta, unwilling to do. Uchcharitam, like stool. Pitu, of the father.
Hare Krishna. Okay, sorry about that. There's sometimes some unpredictable things happen. So let's hope that we can get through the whole class. Okay, so the translation reads, a son who acts by anticipating what his father wants him to do is first class. One who acts upon receiving the father's order is second class, and one who executes his father's order irreverentially is third class. But a son who refuses his father's order is like his father's stool. Please repeat. A son who acts by anticipating what his father wants him to do is first class. One who acts upon receiving his father's order is second class. And one who executes his father's order irreverentially is third class. But a son who refuses his father's order is like his father's stool. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Puru, Yayati's last son, immediately accepted his father's proposal, for although he was the youngest, he was very qualified. Puru thought, I should have accepted my father's proposal before he asked, but I did not. Therefore, I am not a first-class son. I am second-class. But I do not wish to become the lowest type of son who is compared to his father's stool. One Indian poet has spoken of putra and mutra. Putra means son and mutra means urine. Both the son and urine come from the same genitals. If a son is an obedient devotee of the Lord, he is called putra, or a real son. Otherwise, if he is not learned and is also not a devotee, a son is nothing better than urine. So, bit of etiquette there. It reminds me of the first time that I became Prabhupada's full-time personal servant. We were in Vrindavan. This was on December the 2nd, 1975. And somehow or another I got fortunate enough, I was asked to do Prabhupada's massage for a few days when he was in Delhi. and we went to Kurukshetra. And then when we came to Vrindavan at the beginning of December 75, then I was supposed to swap with someone else. They would do the massage and that would be the end of my tenure. However, when Prabhupada found out that they were Harikesh, Prabhu had decided to get somebody else to come in and do the massage and swap with me. Then Prabhupada found out and he wasn't very happy, and he immediately cancelled it. And he said, no, he's doing okay. Let him continue. Otherwise, if you keep swapping my servant, I'm the one that gets disturbed. So in that way, then Harikesh came and told me, okay, get your stuff and move into Prabhupada's house, which of course I very happily did so, but I was completely unqualified. So later on in the day, Prabhupada had had his lunch. He went up onto the roof and he lay down on his bed there. There's a small room on the roof. And he told me, now there's a mat outside the door here. You just sit down and wait. I'm going to take an hour's nap. So when Prabhupada did that, a thought came to me that probably when Prabhupada wakes up, he'll want a glass of water, because that was his natural habit. He liked to drink a lot of water because it flushed his kidneys out, etc. So then I was caught in a quandary that the drinking water was downstairs. So if I went down and got the drinking water, and in the meantime Prabhupada woke up and I wasn't there in his room, then he'll be upset. So to do or not to do, that was the big question. In the end, I thought it's better to stay and wait until Prabhupada wakes up, then if he wants some water, he'll tell me and I'll go down and get it. So Prabhupada slept for about 45 minutes, an hour. And sure enough, he woke up. The first thing that he said was, get me a glass of water. So then I had to explain to him, well, actually, there's no water up here. I have to go downstairs and get it. So that meant Prabhupada had to wait for a minute or two till I arrived back. So Prabhupada looked at me, he said, you did not think that I would want some water when I woke up? So that was my first lesson. Very unqualified son. I didn't know what was to be done or what was not to be done or when it should be done. I had an idea, but I did not act on my initiative. As a result of that, Prabhupada was put out. So I realized that to be a good servant, it's not enough just to do what the guru wants you to do or says what he wants you to do, even if you're obedient. But you should try to anticipate what is the need of the guru and serve that need even before he expresses it. That's a first-class servant. So that was my first little lesson in etiquette there in Vrindavan. So anyway, the same thing here. You've got Puru, he's the youngest of the sons, but he can anticipate what is required. He's very faithful to his father. The other ones were hampered to some degree. First of all, Yadu was, although he was a good son, and Prabhupada says in the text here that he was dharmic, he knew the rules and regulations. But he had a long-term vision of what he should be doing with his life. And he knew that in the future, Lord Krishna would take birth in his dynasty. So he wanted to make sure that that was preserved. So he declined to accept this requirement of his father that he changes his youth for his father's old age. They swap around. Although he was an obedient servant, an obedient son, but he had a higher purpose that needed to be served, and therefore he entered his plea to his father that actually I should not be doing this, and this is my reason why. So he gave his reason, and that was acceptable because it was within the realms of Dharma. But the other three, for one reason or another of their own, they would not fulfill the father's request because they were thinking, we're young men, why should I give my youth to this old man? that will spoil my chance of enjoyment in the material world. So there was a desire there, but it was not Krishna's desire, it was their own desire. So because it was their own desire, then they were rejected. Yeah. A good son or a good disciple does not try to fulfill or use his position in a good family or gotra to fulfill his own desire. If we do that, if we try to take advantage according to what we want, then we cannot fulfill the promise of human form of life. The promise of a human form of life is that now by careful training and practice, one can actually gradually rise up and come to the point where this material body is no longer necessary. In other words, moksha, you get liberation and you go back home, back to Godhead. This is the practice and this is the structure of the Varnashram system. That even you may start at the lowest point, but by following the instructions of the spiritual master, by observing the regulatory principles, gradually the heart becomes purified and you get to this point of desirelessness where there's no more selfish interest. It doesn't mean that there's no desire, but the desire is immediately placed at the convenience, if you like, or at the behest of the guru or the father. So their desire comes first, and our desire is molded on the desire of our superior. So in that way then, everything is nice and smooth and you make steady progress. So these middle three sons, they were not interested ultimately in liberation or moksha. They preferred that they would fulfill their immediate desire, which is to enjoy in the material world. That's what their focus was. And because the focus was so strong, even they got the instruction or request from the father, they couldn't fulfill it. They had to go out and fulfill their own desires. So that means that they're stuck in the material world. You can't get out until you give up your selfish desires or the idea that I am an enjoyer, this is mine, this is what I'll do with it. So I remember there was one early disciple. Of Srila Prabhupada. He joined in 26 Second Avenue. He was one of the very, very first ones. He was an editor and clever with words, writing like that. So Prabhupada engaged him in being the editor for the Back to Godhead magazine. And because Back to Godhead had been checked from publication for a number of years. In the late 1950s, when Prabhupada decided to turn his attention towards writing the Bhagavatam, then he stopped all of the activity in terms of writing. He stopped doing the Back to Godhead magazine. It's not that he didn't want to do it anymore, but he had more of a priority for doing the Bhagavatam. So for some years, that Back to Godhead magazine was not published. And then when Prabhupada came to the West, after a lot of struggle, then finally he got 26 Second Avenue, these boys started coming, Hayagriva came, Rayaram came, both of them were editors. So the first thing that Prabhupada asked them was, help me edit the work that I've already typed out, but I also want to revive this Back to Godhead magazine. Now this was my publication, now you're my spiritual sons, so I'm giving you responsibility to restart or continue on with this Back to Godhead magazine. That will be your service to me, and that will be preaching to the public, general public. So they did that for some time, but then eventually one of them got a little restless, and he found that he couldn't follow the principles properly, and so he gave up. And because that came to Prabhupada's attention. And one comment that he made was that you're asking us to give up the prime necessities of life. Means the four regulative principles. don't intoxicate, don't have illicit sex, don't gamble, like that. So this, for him, he said, this is the prime necessity of life, and you're asking us to give it up. This is unnatural. So he left. So, of course, Prabhupada was disappointed, but he didn't change the standard. Eventually, gradually, he got more disciples, more qualified people. They actually learned how to fulfill Prabhupada's requests. They started putting out the publications from the ISKCON Press, which later on became the BBT. And not only did they, you know, restart the Back to Godhead magazine, which was immensely pleasing to Srila Prabhupada, he told them that when you do this magazine, I want it to come to the standard of Time or Life magazine. They were the top magazines in the world, selling millions of copies. So Prabhupada stuck with that. He didn't accept that, you know, you're denying us the prime necessity of life, because he knew that what this man was thinking was the prime necessity of life actually was not. It was going to drag him down. It was not going to improve his position. It was going to ruin him if he pursued his material desires. So 10 years later, that was 1966, so 1976, Prabhupada was back in America on his last world tour, as it proved. And they had arranged for Prabhupada to be in Washington, D.C. For the first week of July, because in America it's a big deal. July the 4th is Independence Day. And so that particular year was the 200th anniversary of the American Republic, or whatever you call it. So the devotees thought that it would be a good idea if Prabhupada was in the capital of America on their Independence Day. And Prabhupada had previously, a couple of months before, here in Mayapur, he had met with Ravindra Swarup Prabhu, and he had given a kind of questions and answers format for what the real meaning of independence is, American independence. So Prabhupada had said a lot of stuff, and that was published in time for the July 4th celebration in America. And editors came to see Prabhupada, and they told him that now, this month, we're actually going to print 1 million Back to Godheads just for this 1 month. So you can imagine how Prabhupada was so pleased. That was his heart's desire, yeah, that his writings be spread as far and as wide as possible. And the good sons, who accepted that the prime necessity of life was pleasing Prabhupada, they got the credit for doing this wonderful thing. 1 million Back to Godhead magazines in 1 month. Whereas the other gentleman, whose prime necessity of life was not what Prabhupada indicated, but what was according to his own, you know, inner desires, lusty desires, where was he? He was lost. Later on, I heard that he had died of some horrible disease that he had caught due to fulfilling his prime necessity of life. So it's very important that we receive, or we try to anticipate, actually, what Guru requires from us. And whether we're qualified or not, if we try, then eventually, gradually, we get the ability to fulfill the desires of the spiritual master. And once we fulfill the spiritual master's desires, then Prabhupada said, because one time a devotee asked Prabhupada, how do I know if I'm pleasing Krishna or not? Yeah, how can we tell if we're pleasing Krishna? So Prabhupada said, if you're pleasing your guru, then you're pleasing Krishna. That's all. If I'm pleased, Krishna's pleased. So this was the idea that Prabhupada wanted to train us how to fulfill our prime necessities of life by following his instruction and by pleasing him. Prabhupada was on the transcendental level. We were not. But Prabhupada had the ability to bring us to the transcendental level by following his instructions. So in this way, then, that's a simple example. Mine also. I learned that in a very small way. you know, where's the water going? Now I have to wait until you bring some. So anticipation of what Guru wants is all important. Anticipation of Guru's desire, anticipation of Krishna's desire, that's our prime necessity of life. Otherwise there's no such thing as life. We're in dead bodies, and if we think that we are these dead bodies, then what advancement can we make? Yeah, we can put some decorations on the dead body for some time, but ultimately it will fall, yeah, and become completely useless. So Yadu, at least, he knew that first of all there are different stages that the body goes through, and you have to react to those stages. When you're a baby, of course, you're completely helpless in the arms of the mother. But when you grow to adolescence, then so many changes take place in the body and the mind. So many demands, desires come up within the heart. And you can't just block them off. It doesn't work like that. Yeah, you can't just shut them out and pretend that they're not there. The Mayavadis try and do that. They know that the material world is not a nice place and it's not somewhere where you want to stay. But because they don't have anywhere else to focus their desire, ultimately they come back down again to this material realm and they go out and try and fulfill their material desires. So Prabhupada was giving us a platform that once attained could be sustained, whether you have a material body or not, whether, you know, this physical body, whatever stage it's at, whether it's, you know, childhood, youthhood, middle age, old age. Of course, by the time you get to old age, you start realizing what a rotten deal we've got in accepting these material bodies. But we do it. Why? Because we have the desire. The primary function of any living being is desire. Everything that we do, whether it's spiritual or material, is based on desire. But if we do it based on our desire, and we think that we are this body, if you marry those two things together, then it's disastrous. Because this body doesn't last forever. And the desires that we've developed to enjoy in this body, they carry us to the next birth. Then again you have to go through the whole rotten process all over again. So people become mad actually when they try to fulfill their own desires. Just recently I read an article about cryogenics. Does anybody know what cryogenic is? Sikimaiti, yes. So not many people know, but it's something like pickling a human body. You know, pickles, right? You have a jar, you put some substance in, and you can put some, you know, onions or, you know, because in India they like onions. I used to make, when I was a little kid, one of my favorite before bed meals was pickled onions and a block of cheese. That's what I used to eat. But anyway, the point is that desires that we have, they don't just stay with this body, and then when this body dies, then there's no more desire. The desires continue on, and although this material body, physical body dies off, we are then carried by our desires to another physical form. And that happens endlessly. So what advantage is there? That you're born, you grow up, you have some desires, you try to fulfill them, the body eventually grows too old to meet the demands of the desires that we have, then we die, we leave that body, and we have to take another birth and start the whole process all over again. So trying to fulfill our own desires is not a good deal. It's a mistake actually, because we're not this body, that's the whole point. So at some point or another, then you're going to we feel let down, and we realize this body is not the source of enjoyment that we thought it was, or at least we should do, but a lot of people don't. They want to continue on and on and on. So this so-called science of cryogenics, it's an attempt to avoid death. It's an attempt to beat the waves of time that are carrying us from one body to another, one planet to another, one universe to another, all to no avail. So cryogenics, what they do is, the article is about some company in Russia, but it's also going on in America and other places too. They, the very clever salesman, they convince you that actually, although nothing can be done to stop you from leaving your body right now, or nothing can be done to keep this material body that you have going on and going on and going on, disease will come, old age will come, but what we'll do is we'll put you in a pickle jar. Yeah, like a bunch of pickles. We'll put you in a jar, keep you on the shelf, and then in 100 years or 500 years or whatever it is, when we've figured out the cause of your particular death, what disease you had or what organs need replacing, when we've got all that perfectly figured out, we'll bring you back to life in the same body and you can go on enjoying. So I heard that they have Einstein's brain is in a pickle jar. Yeah, they have, somebody's got it on a shelf somewhere. Einstein's brain. So if you can just bring Einstein's brain back to life, then, you know, who knows what he will do next. So that is all nonsense. It's all nonsense. Cryogenics. Yeah, you'll be crying. The guy that sold you the package, yeah, give me $100,000, I'll keep your body preserved. At the right time when we have the technology, we'll bring you back to life. In the meantime, you pay us $100,000, $200,000. He's laughing all the way to the bank. Yeah, but the man who's in the pickle jar, expecting that sometime in the future, who knows when, he'll be brought back to life again by scientific advancement, he's really crying. That's why they call it cryogenics. So, the thing is that we should understand what is what. We should understand what real life is. We should understand the purpose of life. And we should work towards that point. Yes, we want to live forever. But we can't do that on our own. You can do that through the process of Krishna consciousness. Once we understand, first of all, what we're not this body, then we can start to understand what we really are. We're the living entity within this body. And that living entity, if he has to leave this body, is carried by the waves of time. It's carried in a subtle body towards another destination, another womb, or whatever it may be, some other place where you take another birth, and then you have to start all over again. So the real necessity, the prime necessity of life, is to figure out the difference between life and death, the difference between consciousness and matter. And once we understand that, then we can actually sort our problems out, then we can actually attain that prime goal in life, which is freedom. Freedom from old age, birth, disease, and death. That's what we really want. But that freedom comes by reuniting our desires with the prime desire, Krishna. Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. Everything that can be perceived or not perceived belongs to Krishna. It's part of Krishna. It's not ours. So we have to understand what is Krishna's. And when we understand what is Krishna's and what Krishna wants, and we make that our prime necessity of life, then you get success. So Puru also, intelligent, although he was the youngest. And of course in the Vedic system, they have this system of the oldest brother is practically like the father of the family. Even nowadays, sometimes I see it. One time, a few years back, I was in Mathura. I went with one lawyer that was doing some work for us at the MVT. So we had to go and see his elder brother, who was working it for the government in Delhi. So when we went there, and there are five brothers. So he was joking, we're like the Pandavas. There's five of us. So when this fellow that I was with, when we went in to his elder brother's office, then he remained seating. The younger brother came forward and actually bowed down and touched his brother's feet with his hands to show respect to his elder brother. So that's a natural situation. Vedic culture is all about respect. And So Puru was the youngest brother, but he actually turned out to be the wisest. As it's been narrated here, he was actually intelligent, and therefore he understood what the real necessity of life was, and he was not interested in anything else. Whereas the other brothers, who not only didn't do what they were asked, but rejected it completely and went the wrong way, then as the poet Prabhupada quotes here says, then they're not putra. Putra means a good son, just like, you know, when they do the funeral ceremonies. That puja that they do is meant to save the soul that they think is the father from going into the hell known as put. So putra, he's delivered from hell. So this shraddha ceremony that's performed, I think, 1 year after the death of the person, that ceremony, when observed, it saves the person from put, from going to hell. So that putra is okay, is a good son. But the other one, mutra, means just like stool and urine. Apparently coming from the same source, but a completely different result. Yeah, if there's no good son to save the father from going to hell, then he goes to hell and his father also goes to hell. That's the idea. So in Vedic culture, it's all about raising yourself up, 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 getting freed from the lower modes of material nature, ignorance and passion. If our desires are based on our contact with ignorance and passion, then we're in big trouble. But at least if we can come to the mode of goodness, then from that, then enlightenment. We become aware, self-aware. We begin to understand the differences in Krishna's energies, the material energy and the spiritual energy. We begin to understand what true personality is. And we start to develop a desire for that higher principle. Yeah, Udram Gach Chanti Satwasta. Satwasta, Satwik, star means place. So Udvam, going up. This is the society that's based on mode of goodness. That just by being in that atmosphere, you learn how to raise yourself up into the mode of goodness, and from the mode of goodness you can actually become enlightened as to what the true nature and meaning of life actually is. Scientists will never understand this. They'll never find out what the purpose of life is, because they're always in the modes of ignorance and passion. They have no understanding about the necessity to come at least to the platform of goodness, and then from that platform to the transcendental platform. So two good sons, Yadu and Puru, and the others, Mutra. That's all, stool and urine. Not good at anything. So this goes on. I'm going to finish at this point. Does anybody have any questions or comments? Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Prabhuji, as you are telling that to anticipate the desire of Guru is required. Yeah. So what sometimes we have a personal desire, but how to differentiate whether it is for the pleasure of Guru or not? Like Srila Prabhupada had his own desire to preach in India.
Well, but how to anticipate what the Guru, whether it, something we're feeling is Guru's desire or not, you have three choices: Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. If your Guru's not immediately around, you've got Shastra. Or if that Shastra's not available, there are many saintly persons and you can put your questions towards them. The point is that there's always some higher authority. If we think there's nobody higher than me, I know everything, I don't need to ask anybody anything, I'll do what pleases me, well, then you're in big trouble. Yeah. The real thing is to learn from superiors. Just as I've given the example of the brothers. That was the system, that knowledge was passed down within a family. This is Jati Dharma. Yeah, ja, birth. So jati dharma, it's the traditions, the interactions, social interactions that go on in any family, they're purified, they're upheld, yeah, by passing them down automatically from one generation to another. That was Arjuna's biggest fear, one of his fears, when he was told by Krishna to fight. He said, but if I fight and I kill all the males, kill all these warriors, then who will give guidance to the rest of the family? Then I'll be a destroyer of the family values. So family value, as long as it's based on spiritual principles, is very, very valuable. And we have so many sources that we can access in order to learn what should be done and what should not be done. Naturally, in this Kali Yuga especially, we're hit with so many desires. Yeah. Now, last 20, 30 years, they've been trying to turn India into another consumer nation. Economics. This is the only thing that's any good. If you want to fulfill your prime necessities of life, yeah, go out and get drunk. Yeah. This is India now is doing this all over. So some of the worst problems that they have in Indian families, especially in the villages now, is that all the males, they earn money and then they go out and spend it on booze. So the government's making so much revenue from the sale of liquor, so they won't stop it. But, you know, half the village is a bunch of drunkards and useless people, and the rest of the family is suffering. So there's a breakdown there in this jati dharma. But if dharma is upheld and sustained, that will elevate the person rather than denigrate them. So naturally we'll have questions, what's to be done, what's not to be done. We're not omniscient like Krishna. But that doesn't mean that there's no direction. It doesn't mean that there's no standards that we can compare our activity or desire with, you know, which will bring us to the right point. It's there. The Shastra is there. Prabhupada gave the example of Vedic culture, that it's like a dead elephant. It's an elephant, you know, it's a big thing. And whether it's alive or dead, you get... In those days, he said, if you want to buy an elephant, it costs you 1 lakh of rupees. But if you have a dead elephant and you sell that, you get 1 lakh of rupees. So he said, Vedic culture now, practically it's dead. But still, even though it's practically dead, it's still useful. It still has value. So Prabhupada was trying to give us as much culture as possible in as short a time as he had. And he did that by writing his books. That was the primary necessity, to get the knowledge out there. But apart from that, then also Prabhupada initiated so many devotees to bring them up to the Brahminical standard. He opened temples where we could live very nicely in an atmosphere of transcendental goodness. So in that way, then Prabhupada was trying to re-establish some semblance of Vedic culture. And all we have to do is to agree to follow. But that will not do. That's the problem. This devotee that I mentioned at the beginning, he left because he said Prabhupada was denying them the prime necessity of life. So he left for some time. Then after a little while, he wrote back to Prabhupada that, actually, I like the company of devotees. I'd like to live in the temple, but I don't want to follow the principles. So that was his idea. So Prabhupada wrote back, if you don't follow the principles, then you can't stay. Sorry. We have a standard. If you don't want to follow the standard, you cannot stay. Then you do whatever you like. But I'm not, you know, I can't allow you. How can I allow you to live in the temple and spoil the atmosphere? That's my words, not Prabhupada's. But that's the essence of what he was saying. If you live in the temple and don't follow the principles, you will spoil the atmosphere for all the others who do want to follow. So no, I'm sorry, if you want to live in one of the temples, you must come up to the standard of four regulative principles and chanting 16 rounds. What you do the rest of the time, that's all right, you fulfill. But if you want to be counted as a devotee or aspirant devotee, there is a standard and you have to follow that. So there's a bottom line that we draw. Otherwise it's animal life, as Prabhupada says here. If you don't follow these principles and gradually elevate yourself using this human form, this human body, to elevate yourself, then you're no better than an animal. And most people are on that level, unfortunately. So that was Prabhupada's mission, to save us from going to hell, to save us from becoming cats and dogs in our next lives. You might be the Prime Minister of India one minute, and the next minute you're a dog in Sweden. Prabhupada said that. Some astrology that Prabhupada knew, he was discussing one particular politician, big politician. So this man was known to be very licentious. And he died. And this astrologer he looked at his chart. He said, yes, he said, there's one man in Sweden. He has two dogs. One of them is this politician. So, king for a day, right? He was on the top of the world, leader of the biggest democratic country in the world. How many years did he get? 3 or 4 years, maybe 10 years at the most. And then he died. And what's the end result? He becomes a dog. And then in how many lifetimes will it take for him till he comes back to the human form? So we have to be very, very careful. We have to seek out those who have real knowledge. And then we have to practice also as best we can. Prabhupada knew this is Kali Yuga. There's going to be so many problems. But if we just somehow or another cultivate the right relationship with him as our guru, or his descendants as our gurus, then somehow or another everything gradually will settle down. He used to give the example also, just like if you have a pond, if you stir up the bottom of the pond, it's all muddy, so the whole water becomes cloudy. But after some time, if you let it settle and not disturb it, all the mud sinks back down to the bottom and the water becomes clear again. So our consciousness is very muddy. We get clouded over. This is material desire. It confuses the intelligence. Contact with material nature confuses the intelligence. And when the intelligence is lost, Krishna says, Bhagavad Gita, what happens? When your intelligence is lost, you're lost, you're gone, finished. So we have to be very careful. It's a science, we have to have knowledge, we have to have practice, and we have to have association. If we have those things, I'm practically guaranteed, Prabhupada said, you'll go back to Godhead, as he sometimes told Jayaprataka Maharaj, that, if we're not 100% Krishna conscious, can we go back to Godhead? Prabhupada said, all right, 90%. Well, what if I can't even do 90%? All right, then 70%. Something, and you'll still go. So it requires a little bit of faith to start with, and sadhu sangha, association, keep yourself in a good atmosphere of, goodness and development, development of consciousness, not material development. That's not development, that's suicide. Real development means the consciousness, the awareness of the individual increases to the point where he can separate spirit from matter. And that is the definition of intelligence that Prabhupada said. Real intelligence means to be able to discriminate between spirit and matter. Once you can do that, then you're assured of progress. Okay. One last question, Annie? Sikhi Maniti Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Another example about the power of the order of the guru. Sometimes you think the order has to be practical, or appears to be practical.
Yes, a little too close to the microphone.
Is that better?
A little loud.
Hare Krishna. Good. Okay. Sometimes it appears that we think the order has to be something practical, but it doesn't necessarily. That example of the Brahmin reading Bhagavad Gita, uh-huh. You can talk about that, or I can tell anyone.
Well, ultimately, everything's practical.
Well, the guru ordered him to read Bhagavad Gita, but he couldn't read. So everyone was making fun of him. During Lord Chaitanya's period, he's sitting there.
Krishna also says that he is the ability in men. Yeah.
So Lord Chaitanya so happened to come by and see the Brahmin sitting there, reading.
Well, he understood the purport. He may not have understood the mechanism for attaining it, but he actually understood the goal.
Right.
So that's perfection.
That was perfection.
That's however you get there, but if you get to the point where you're fully surrendered to Krishna, then you know everything that needs to be known.
Yeah. So then he's crying, and he asks, well, why are you crying? So when I see that picture of Krishna driving Arjuna on a chariot,
yes,
brings tears to my heart. So you understand the real purport.
Yes, that means that he understood Krishna's happiness is primary. Our happiness is dependent on our surrender to Krishna. Krishna is the intelligence in man. So and he also says that I'll carry to you what you lack, I'll preserve what you have, and I'll carry what you lack. So that's a good example of the Brahmana reading the Gita even though he couldn't read. He was reading actually, because he knew what the purport was. He knew the end result would be that he would go back to be with Krishna. So somehow or another Krishna will help us, that's a fact. If we have problems, we're bound to have problems. There's nobody in the material world that doesn't have problems. Even Lord Brahma has problems, probably more than ours anyway. But we have to somehow or another center whatever we're doing, whatever we're thinking, everything about our lives, center it on the one perfect person who, by fulfilling whose desire, our desires will automatically be fulfilled. Yeah, we're intrinsically part of Krishna's nature. So that means that whatever we do, wherever we are, if we connect consciously with Krishna, everything will come out perfectly. All right, we'll finish there. Thank you all very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
It's great. Sorry, Prabhupada ki jai.